Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. And as promised, today's show is not going to be about the election or any stress of what's going on with politics. We're going to take a spiritual breather and talk about what's really important. I have a friend and a guest that was on the show quite a while ago when we talked about his earlier work, 2012 and The Shift. Let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Jack Alice. He's an author. He's a spiritual teacher in the tradition of the indigenous people of Earth, including virtually all the Native American traditions. So I have a lot in common with Jack. But today we're going to talk about his latest book, which he wrote as a novel, Blue Sun, Red Sun, A Tale of Ancient Prophecy Unfolding in the Modern World. So good morning, Jack.
Good morning to you. It's so refreshing we're not going to talk about traditional politics. I like the sound of that.
All right. But I mean, after reading your book, I can certainly see where it all fits in. Into the time we're living in. Jack, when I had you on the show last, we talked about 2012. And a lot of people had high expectations for 2012. They thought, you know, paradise was going to arrive in 2012, on my birthday, no less, in 2012, December 21st.
Really?
All right. So,
what a wonderful birthday you have. That's probably my second favorite day of the year, behind spring equinox, I think, is the highlight of my year. But you got a good birthday.
Yeah, I guess I picked the right day to come in. When I read about, you took me back to what I love doing the most, which is teaching Native American spirituality and the medicine wheel. Because the world is so crazy, I don't seem to have found the time lately to talk about that when I'm covering all the insanity that's been going on. So you kind of rooted me into a peaceful state. Once again, it was almost like a reminder of what you and I know and what we want to share with the audience.
Can I say just a word here?
Sure.
About why we're not talking about traditional politics on this day where, you know, we don't even know who the next president's going to be and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
There's something very important in this that's essential to the message that I have for people. And that is, I didn't vote, for example. I haven't voted since 1996. I voted for Dole. Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe he's still alive.
I pledged on that day that was the last time I would ever vote. I just felt so terrible. And I feel like I'm sanctioning a system that is basically, you know, very evil and unfixable and that is the primary obstacle to any real change in the world. So I think it's really essential for people to bow out of that system, to say no to that system, to stop supporting it on either side, because it's an illusion. It's an illusion that's created by the global elite, the powers behind the scenes in the world. It's an illusion that's created, the purpose of which is, like what you just touched upon a second ago, the purpose of which is to distract us from what's really important in life. And as long as we're wrapped up in that illusion of traditional politics, we also are kind of in the prison of that of traditional politics in terms of how we feel, how we think, our spiritual beliefs, those sorts of things. It weighs us down and prevents us from really fulfilling who we are as human beings and our true potential as spiritual warriors and as multidimensional spiritual beings. So it's an illusion that I really think people need to break free from on both sides, whether it be Trump or whether it be Biden. The whole thing's an illusion. And one of the things that's been so dismaying for me during this electoral process is I hear so many people talking about a great awakening that's happening, and a great awakening that's going to be something that's going to free us and it's going to allow us to create a new world, to create a better world. And most of those so-called people who are participating in this Great Awakening are all people who you know, went and voted for Joe Biden. And I find that very discouraging in terms of, you know, if people are really waking up and if people are really getting it, wouldn't that mean that they would stay away from the polls as opposed to, you know, getting involved in traditional politics, which is just so corrupt and contaminated and unfixable?
Well, wouldn't you say the same about traditional religion?
Well, sure. Traditional everything, really. I pretty much feel that way about everything. I refer to it as the old paradigm or the old paradigm civilized world. And just about everything in that old paradigm civilized world is pretty you know, off base and corrupt and contaminated. And I believe the whole thing has to go. I've been an advocate for a long time of I believe it's inevitable that the old paradigm is going to collapse at some point. I believe it's inevitable because it is just so hideously out of balance with nature and her laws. I believe it's inevitable that it's going to collapse at some point, and I think it would be a good thing for us for it to collapse. And that's why one of the things I advocate is people preparing themselves for the day when that happens, so that people are in a position that they can take care of themselves, you know, when the system is no longer able to take care of them, you know, for them, you know, which it does now. It's a dependency system, basically. So people need to prepare, and people need to prepare for the day when they need to take care of themselves, because they won't have the system to take care of them anymore. And if enough of us prepare, and if enough of us, you know, stop supporting the system and begin reassuming complete responsibility for our lives, then when the system does collapse, those of us who are prepared, we're going to be okay. We're going to be able to survive, and we're going to be able to move forward.
All right.
So I think that's an important reason why we're not talking about that. But people do need to be aware of why we're not talking about it, because it's an illusion, and it's an illusion that weighs us down.
Well, listen, Jack, I've said for decades now that the whole system needs an enema from top to bottom.
You and I have both been preaching this message for a pretty long time, haven't we? I've been preaching it for a good 20 years. I've been on it.
I've been on it for almost 40 years, and I'll tell you what, there are days that I feel like it just falls on deaf ears.
Well, I pretty much feel that way today. I'm pretty discouraged about the way things are going, to tell you the truth, and I don't believe that there's a great awakening. I believe that the vast majority of people who need to be waking up, I think, are still pretty much slumbering. So I still work for that, and you know, try to get the word out there as much as I can. But it's a hard wall to crack, you know, if somebody's, you know, mind is shut off, and if their spirit is shut off, and if they're, you know, susceptible to all the brainwashing, you know, that's out there, which is, you know, substantial.
Right.
My credo is to keep plugging away and do as much as we can possibly do. And I've also, an important part of my message is the preparation part, because I'm ready. You know, I'm ready for the world to go, and I'm doing as much as I can reasonably do up here in the remote mountains of Northern California. I'm doing as much as I can do up here to create my own world. You know, we're off the grid up here. We got spring water and solar power, and we're completely off the grid, and we're very, very far from civilization. So, a lot of the issues of civilization really don't even touch us up here. And even this part of the country, I don't know what it's like where you live in Arizona, but you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere here. And the people here tend to be paying a whole lot less attention here to the COVID crisis. You know, there's not too many people wearing masks, and people are just kind of living normally, which feels really good to me. People we're so far away from civilization that I feel like in many ways we're kind of immune to it all, which is wonderful.
All right. Well, it sounds great. But, you know, reading your book, even though it's written as a novel, I can see all the truth in it. And also, you're very aware of what's going on in the world, because it's evident to me as I read your book. As you know, there's so much in this book. Believe it or not, I have a list of about 40 questions that I wanted to ask you. So it's almost a point where I almost don't know where to start. But you know what? Many years ago, I read the book on The Hopi by Frank Waters. And I know the whole story there. And I think if there was a Native American book out there, I have read them all. And the way that you included the Hopi prophecy of the blue sun and red sun in the back of this book, it was great. if you look around at the world today, I would say, and especially after reading your book, that we're very close to what you talk about in this book, if not already in the middle of it. And I'm not just, you know, I'm not just speaking from myself. I'm speaking from other spiritual people that I know that are in alignment with what you have in this book. You know, just the fact that you have, you've noticed and you mentioned chemtrails in your book. You know, this is something that, you know, has been going on for a long time. And then you also hypothetically talk about it, an epidemic. You don't name the epidemic. But I thought immediately when I saw epidemic, my own opinion and what I get from spirit is they're using the chemtrails to spread this disease, COVID-19. I wanted your idea on that.
Well, that certainly could be one of the reasons why chemtrails exist. I think the chemtrails exist for a multitude of different reasons, and I think they achieve a lot of different purposes. Certainly, that's one possibility. And chemtrails is one of those issues that it so beautifully illustrates, you know, what's really going on in the world. And the fact that so many people just don't even see them and don't even see this as an important issue.
Right.
Again, it's one of those things that tends to indicate that people just really don't get it because it's so obvious. And that's right there. And they're obviously not, you know, the fumes from jet aircraft. It's so obvious when you just watch them in terms of, you know, how they spread and how they behave and what they do.
Those are
formations that are formed. I also believe there's quite a bit of climate control involved in this. Is another one of the purposes of the chemtrails. And right now, the biggest disadvantage to living where I'm living right now is we're in the middle of just a horrible, horrible drought here. And it's really reaching kind of crisis proportions. It really just isn't raining here anymore. We're in our wet season now, and the sun's been shining brightly for 2 months now, and the forecast is calling for a little bit of rain now. But we're in the middle of a horrible drought here, and I believe that that's part of the geoengineering that is behind chemtrails, because the chemtrails is really, really thick here.
Oh, they're very thick here, too.
You would think out of the middle of nowhere that they wouldn't be, you know, as bad. You'd think they'd be concentrated over the cities and where there's a bunch of people. But they're as bad here as they are anywhere. And I believe climate control is one of the reasons for that. And, you know, this is an area, too. This is an area that I live in here that we could survive here, you know, in this, you know, this area of Northern California in the remote mountains, because the people who live here are basically farmers and ranchers and people who live here because they want to be away from the city and they want to be living close to nature. And people here tend to be very independent minded, and they tend to be very, very, taking responsibility for their own life, first and foremost, and everybody's got gardens and everybody's got solar panels. And this is an area where I think humanity could keep going, you know, if everything collapsed out there. And so it's interesting that this area might be threatened, you know, by the drought, because if this drought continues, you know, this is just going to be a wasteland pretty soon, and
right.
It's not going to be possible to live here anymore.
Right.
So that certainly is what the chemtrails, though, is such an important issue, and it's so revealing in terms of, you know, how the mainstream politics, do we ever hear a word spoken about chemtrails in mainstream politics? Maybe one politician every 5 years might say something about it.
Right. And
right there,
it's right there,
that's
right.
The problem right there.
Exactly. Well, you know, I have to tell you, I've been pointing out chemtrails to people since the 90s. But in the, you know, mountain town that I live in, people are very aware of the chemtrails. Like if I'm walking into the gym and it's, you know, the crisscrosses are going on like crazy as I try to hold my breath, not to breathe it in, everybody in the gym will remark, wow, look at how much they're spraying today. And it just seems...
In some places, people are really getting it, because I've never really experienced that. It seems like I'm the only one who sees them and the only one who says anything about it.
Well, I've got most of them in agreement with me. It seems whenever we have heavy spraying, the next thing you know, the majority of people in town are sick, physically sick, which led me to believe, you know, chemtrails, the perfect when you're giving something out, I think it's the perfect way for them to infect us with whatever they want, especially because most people don't notice them. So it's a good dispersal system. But you also talk about mind control and chemtrails. And I think about people I've, you know, through the years interviewed, you know, on, you know, HARP, on the chemtrails. But one good thing is that people are starting to notice them. They are talking about it. Even when I go to my doctor, who used to think it was bullcrap, I said they've been spraying us like bugs, because he'll say, you know, we don't know why. It seems like everybody in town is suffering the same symptoms. And I said, well, maybe the pharmaceutical companies need to make some money. So, you know, and yes, I'm not going to say everybody notices them. I got kicked off a newspaper here. I used to write for one of the newspapers here. And when I wrote a story with pictures I took in the sky above my own house of the chemtrails, they kicked me off the newspaper.
Oh, really?
And I said, why are you holding back the truth? Why don't you trust people to make up their own mind, read an article and make up their own mind? And the only answer I
get. Okay. Can I ask you a question? Do you agree with me that the so-called Great Awakening is overrated, or do you believe that there's an awakening that's happening out there? I'd be interested in hearing, you know, another opinion on this subject.
The Great Awakening, I think the Great Awakening, people have attached it to people first seeing how evil and corrupt their government is. I don't see it as a great spiritual awakening. That's not what I get in my visions, okay? What I get in my visions, and I'm sorry to say it, is the majority of people living are not going to make it. If that's what you're asking me.
I agree. I think there is a catastrophe in our near future, in which is going to be very challenging for the vast majority of humanity, and a lot of people aren't going to make it. I agree with that. I don't know what form that's going to take yet, but...
Well, I don't either, but you know, I've been saying through the years that there's a war going on for human souls, and your book only reinforced that to me. And the truth of the matter is, I think a lot of people have already exited their bodies, and their bodies are just still moving around, but they don't know the difference.
Right.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of soulless beings just walking around. Now, one of the most interesting things in your book, which tied into another great teacher that I have on my show, Michael Rakia out of the UK, when we talked about on our last show how these beings reincarnate as leaders, and we just keep getting the same people over and over again, and how these people truly have no, they've got no semblance of humanity or being a human being. And while I was reading your book, Blue Sun, Red Sun, when you started talking about hybrids, that was like bingo to me. So I don't know if I totally agree with you on the white race being genetic hybrids, because I think that it's not limited to the white race, but maybe they're the majority, I don't know. So do you want to explain what you mean by hybrids?
Well, as I understand it, you know, the ETs have been around for a long time. They arrived here, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, probably longer than that. And whether we're talking about one particular strain of ET, or whether ETs from a lot of different places, I think it's probably a lot of different places. I don't think it's just from one system, from one star system or anything like that.
I agree.
They've been around for a long, long time, and they were here for the purpose of colonization, and they're here for the purpose of extracting natural resources from this very rich and bountiful planet of ours. And one of the things that they did when they were here was they started interbreeding with human beings, with the indigenous people of those times. And this could have been done either in laboratories, or it could have been done, you know, the good old-fashioned, you know, biological way, you know, by mating. But this story comes up again and again and again in terms of them doing this, for the purpose of creating a race. And creating a slave race, if you will. They needed workers, and they needed an obedient workforce, but they also needed to manage the indigenous humans who could create problems for them, you know, over and over again in terms of messing with their agenda. And this comes up again and again and again. I recently read a book that I hadn't ever read. I'm surprised I've never read the book before. It's called Chariots of the Gods by, Von Daniken. And again, he traces this story back to numerous places. And this the story about interbreeding with indigenous humans of the times. This particular story comes from a wide variety of different places. It virtually comes from every every indigenous culture on Earth. You know, tells the same ancient story about beings from the stars coming and mating with humans, interbreeding with humans, and you know, creating this this separate race, which was part ET and part hybrid. And another reason for the genetic hybrids also would be that these could be the people who they could operate through. You know, these people that could then become, you know, the kings and the queens and the pharaohs of antiquity and the gods of Olympus, et cetera, et cetera. And that the ETs could actually, you know, rule the planet, you know, through the hybrids who were part ET and part human. And that this would be another one of the purposes of it. So I believe there's a strong possibility that, when we begin to trace back, you know, who the global elite are, and when you get back to families like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and and families like that who've been around forever and who own everything and have such incredible power as a function of that, I think there's a distinct possibility that if those Illuminati aren't genetic ETs, then there's a layer of humanity, if you want to call them that, above them that are, and that are, you know, calling a lot of the shots and here on the planet and are kind of running the show behind the scenes.
Right.
And all the things that I'm mentioning here, Maria, are all possibilities. You know, I'm mentioning a bunch of different possibilities here. Right. But I think as thinking human beings, I think in order for us to make sense out of such a nonsensical world, it's necessary for us to look at all the various possibilities.
Right.
You know, we can't just say, well, that's impossible. It can't be. We need to look at all the various possibilities. So,
right. Well, you know, the story is as old as time.
Can I just make one concluding statement on this? I think there's very compelling evidence that the white race is primarily a genetic hybrid. And I've been more or less comfortable with the fact that I, as a white person, probably trace my origins off planet. I've never really had much of a identification with my, my blood heritage. In terms of, I'm a white man. I come from the British influence on my father's side, genetic influence on my father's side, and Scottish on my mother's side. So I'm as white as I can be, but I've kind of reconciled myself to the fact that as a white person, there's a good chance that my genetic heritage traces off planet. And I'm okay with that. I know it's a horrible atrocity that's performed.
Hey,
I'm more or less reconciled myself with it, and also reconciled myself to the fact that I can, you know, achieve my full potential as a spiritual being in spite of all this, tinkering.
Right. Well, don't feel too bad, Jack. When I was four, I got hit by a truck and died for a while. And when I came back or came to, one of my earliest memories that I never forgot was I said, where am I? How do I get home? Who are these people? They're not my people. And I've spent the last 60 plus years trying to figure out a way home because I've never really fit in. Even as a broadcaster, people try to label me and they can't because I'm not usual. We'll call it usual. Jack, I'm hearing some squeaks there. Is your phone okay?
Okay. No, that was my thermostat. I'm just refilling my coffee cup. Sorry.
Okay. But, you know, when you were talking about the interbreeding, even the people, you know, whether it's the Jews, whether it's the Christians, if you look at the Bible, the early Bible stories make it very clear that we have these hybrids among us when they refer to them as the Nephilim, you know, where the angels saw the humans and they got hot for them and they came down and had sex with them. And then they had this race of super beings, you know, whether you wanted to call it, you know, Samson or whatever, you know, became lore. And when you look at, You know, I was watching some documentary of some full tomb that they found in Egypt just a while ago where it was intact. But when you look at the ancient art, you see ETs in them. You see UFOs in them. So this is something a lot of humanity has been aware of for a long time. I think less people today are aware of it than they were 1,000 years ago.
That's one of the areas in which people seem, in which there seems to be an awakening, and that is the whole ET phenomenon. Because the conferences that they're holding these days are just jam packed with people. In terms of there's one, Contact in the Desert, I think is one of the most famous ones. That's an annual event. I don't think it was held last year because of the COVID situation. But those events they're just packed. There are thousands of people there. And I've also heard that a lot of behind the scenes things happening at those events that tends to indicate that a lot of those people, even though they're there and they're believing it all, they really aren't doing much with the information that they're waking up to. And that's one of the issues I have, is that it's one thing to wake up, you know, to the truth about what's really happening in the world.
Right.
But then what do you do with that information once you have it? You just kind of store it away and let it sit there and go about and live your life the way you always have? Or do you make some changes in how you live because of what you're learning and because of, you know, how things really work behind the scenes? And I think until we start changing the way that we live, you know, in relationship to these things, because if all these things are true, you know, if the conspiracy we're talking about is true, if the ET thing is true, then humanity is really in plus the COVID, not to mention the COVID crisis. If all these things are true, humanity is really in quite a pickle here. And it's necessary for us to, you know, to reach that conclusion, not just understanding about ETs or understanding about the conspiracy, but if all that's true, then what next? You know, what do I do about it? How do I live my life in a way that, you know, that helps me in relationship to these forces we're talking about? And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people, you know, change the way they, if ever there was a time for people to, you know, to sell their homes and liquidate their assets and head for the hills, this would be the time. And, but I don't see much of that.
Well, that's almost, you know, for a lot of people now, you know, especially with the COVID, that's become a financial impossibility. And a lot of people just feel trapped. But I have taught for many years, and people may think it's just a stupid slogan, but the only ticket out of here is a spiritual one. And spirituality is how you live your day from the minute you get up till the minute you go to bed.
Let me comment on that, Maria, because I've been at a point in my life where I was financially trapped and where I was, you know, trapped in other ways, too, in terms of I just didn't see any way out. I was financially trapped, and I was trapped by virtue of just all the circumstances of my life. But I didn't buy into that. You know, I didn't buy into that. In spite of the fact that I was trapped, I didn't believe I was trapped, even though I was. I didn't believe it. And I managed to manifest myself out of that trap, you know, with no money and everything else. And things ended up turning around, and I ended up, you know, manifesting, you know, basically my vision about how I wanted to live and how I wanted to live spiritually up here in the mountains. Mm-hmm. I basically manifested all that. You know, I didn't have any money, and I was just as trapped as anybody else. But I think we need to break through a lot of those barriers. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of poor people. I know that I was poor, and, you know, like 15 years ago, I had no money at all. I lost everything overnight at a certain investment opportunity. But it was at that time where, you know, my spirituality kicked in and where, you know, my belief in miracles started kicking in. And all of that, you know, manifested itself in terms of, you know, I got out of the trap and mm-hmm. I even manifested myself some, you know, enough money to, you know, to live a, you know, a good, comfortable, productive life. So, I think we can't allow ourselves to be trapped in such a way. We got to figure out a way of how to get out of the trap.
Well, let me ask you this: is this book, even though it's written as a novel, is this book based on your own experience?
Almost completely.
I thought so. I thought
so. The next thing is, it's a vision of what, you know, I'm living up here right now, basically by myself. And we started out as four people, and the other three people up here just didn't work. So I'm up here by myself now, doing as much as I can reasonably do. And Eric and Hetty, who own the land, or live about a mile away, down at the bottom of the road. But Blue Sun, Red Sun is a vision of what could be up here where I live if 15 people like the characters in my book were to come here and were to commit themselves totally to creating a sustainable world in this place. And as you see from the book, these are not just 15, you know, ordinary humdrum people. It's 15 extraordinary people who have been guided here in extraordinary ways, in extraordinary spiritual ways, and have discovered each other and have, made this commitment, you know, to living this way and to leaving the outside world behind and to creating a sustainable world in which could survive in spite of, you know, what happened outside. So, yeah, the book is a vision. It takes place. The physical aspect of the book is exactly what it's like up here where I live. It's just a carbon copy of it.
Wow.
It is based upon my experience. And the character, the old man Jack in the book, is definitely modeled after me in terms of, you know, my own experiences and how I was guided here. And Jack is very much me, and he's been through a lot of the experiences in life that I've been through politically. Like, he's a very libertarian-based in his politics, and I certainly have that in my roots.
Uh-huh.
And so, a lot of this is a lot of my own personal spiritual experiences. And
you know what? And separate of that, it's a very enjoyable book to read. And it just takes you away. And, you know, once you start reading it, it's hard to put it down because you want to see what's coming next. Jack, we need to take a short break. Stay with us. Jack and I will be right back. Hi, Maria here, and I have a message due to the pressure of the times we're living in. I'm calling on all students and millennials to get the education they need to fight the fascism taking over our world. I've made a special subscription offer for students and for seniors on a limited budget. For just $9.99 a month, you can subscribe and get that education. Over 500 hours of real education that's necessary to understand the world, the problems, and the solutions. Remember, knowledge is power. Together, you can change the world, but to do so, you must be informed of what's really going on and have real facts to support you in your endeavors. It's time for all the grandmothers to take a stand and teach the younger generation what their life could be and how to get there. Help me help you. One person cannot do it alone, and the guidance you seek is right here at www.maria.net, MERIA.net. Your generation is the generation we've been waiting for, so let me help you. Thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Jack Alice. We're talking about his latest book, Blue Sun, Red Sun, A Story of Ancient Prophecy Unfolding in the Modern World. I'm going to put a live link to Jack's website, jackalice.com, where you can buy his book, check out his DVDs, and check out his work. Jack, let's get back to the Hopi prophecy of the Blue Sun and Red Sun. And I know we don't have, you know, all day. I wish we did. But what's the basis of this prophecy? Can you, like, shrink it down to where my audience can get it?
Okay. First of all, you mentioned Frank Waters' book, Book of the Hopi. Book of the Hopi is one of the foremost books on the Hopi. And, you know, if people want to learn about the Hopi, I recommend that very, very highly. But I did not get the story of the Blue and the Red Cochinos from Book of the Hopi by Frank Waters. I got it from a gentleman by the name of Robert Wilsworth, who was an emissary to the Hopis, as well as many, many other Native American traditions down in the Southwest. And he spent a lot of time with the Hopis, and he spent a lot of ceremonial time with them. And they were looking for white people who could help them to spread their message. And one of the reasons for that is it wasn't that they doubted themselves or anything like that. It had to do with their language. Their language is a very difficult language to translate. It's like the Mayan language. The Mayan language is like part, you know, language, phonetic, like our language. And it's part hieroglyphic, you know, wherein, the meaning of the language is actually seen in the shape of the words, you know, of the words that you see on the stone or on the paper or whatever that was. So they had a hard time translating their work so it was understandable to white people, and that's why they invited Frank Waters to come, and Westwell, That's why they invited Frank Waters to write his book, because they wanted an enlightened white man, spiritually aware white man, to be able to tell their tale and do it justice because of the language problems involved. Mm-hmm. But I got my version of the story of the Blue and the Red Kachina is from Ghostwell's book, which is entitled Last Cry, Native American Prophecies and Tales of the End Times. And it was given to him or spoken to him by a gentleman by the name of Chief Dan Evahima, who's a very, very noteworthy Hopi elder who's been passed on quite a while back. And he passed the story on to Ghostwolf in a ceremony of some kind. He passed it on verbally or in some kind of a ceremonial state. And then Ghostwolf wrote it in the book Last Cry. And if people want to read it, I recommend it very, very highly. You can go to my website and click on articles, and it's printed there. It's about 3 pages. And it's also the last section of my book. I reprint it also in the appendix.
Right.
But to make the Blue Thorn and the Red Thorn as simple as possible, it had to do with the coming of, first the coming of the Blue Thorn and then the coming of the Red Thorn, which were celestial lights, if you will. And the Hopi were never, you know, this is all very, it's all very mysterious and it's all very cryptic, and they were never really, totally clear about what these spiritual forces were, that these forces could manifest themselves in a lot of different ways. But essentially the meaning of the Blue Sun was going to come first, and the Blue Sun was a sign that the times of paradigm shift or the times of transformation were close at hand. In other words, pay attention, the time is almost here. And then when the Red Sun arrived, this would be a sign that the times of transformation had actually arrived. In other words, it's here. Mm-hmm. And I think you can remember from my book, I take this quite literally in terms of, in my book is based upon the coming of first the coming of the Blue Sun and then the coming of the Red Sun, which in this case are actually star-like bodies that can be seen in the sky. Mm-hmm. And whether or not the Blue Sun and the Red Sun have actually appeared yet or not is a subject of debate. But because they can appear in different forms, you know, one of the things that Gusto says in the story from Chief Dan is he says that the Blue Star Kachina would begin to be seen or to be experienced at their ceremonies and at their ceremonial fires.
Right.
And so these spiritual beings can manifest themselves not only as lights in the sky, but they can manifest themselves in many other ways. And what they were predicting or foretelling was this paradigm shift. And in the case of the story of the Hopi prophecy, the paradigm shift was very absolute in terms of the old paradigm world was going to pretty much be wiped away, you know, by the forces that were involved here. And the forces that were involved here were both man-made, in terms of humanity contributing to all this through their stupidity. Mm-hmm. And there were also natural forces in terms of things that Mother Earth was going to do to fight back, you know, in the forms of earthquakes and winds and high winds and various destructive forces of those kinds, tsunami. But in the Hopi prophecy, the old paradigm, the third dimensional paradigm world is pretty much wiped away. But Chief Dan and Ghostwolf repeat again and again and again that we have the opportunity, you know, as human beings, to transcend this paradigm shift, to survive it, and to persevere in this great challenge as a function of how we live. And he states again and again and again that this has happened before in the Hopi legend, in the Hopi prophecies, and in the Hopi histories. The world has already been destroyed. Has already been destroyed 3 times, and so we are now living in the fourth incarnation of this world, which is now on the verge of collapse. And on each occasion, those humans who were around and those humans who followed the original teachings, who followed the ancient teachings, and who stayed true to the path, stayed true to the spiritual path. And who lived in nature, and who lived sustainably, and who had their own source of water and energy, and who kept their connection with the Spirit in terms of their relationship with the original teachings and their relationship with the divine Spirit, those humans who did all those things could survive this paradigm shift, mm-hmm. And could make it through and survive, and could then create the foundation, you know, for creating the new world from the ashes of the old. So it's basically all thrown back upon us, you know, upon human beings, A, to understand all this, and B, to change the way that we live, you know, in harmony with, you know, the Hopi teachings and the original teachings and, you know, following the red road, basically, is what I like to refer to it as.
Right, right.
So though the message is you're dire, and it's one with a lot of death and destruction, it's also one of hope, and it's also one that's thrown back upon us as humans. You know, we have the power to get through this thing. And that's basically one of the things I'm trying to exhibit up here. I'm trying to show it up here. Because most people would say, oh, you know, you're going to live the way you live. There's no way. That's impossible. And I'm attempting to show that it is possible. And that I've done a pretty good job of it up here, even, you know, at my old age. And like, physically, I'm not able to do the things I was able to do, you know, years ago, just because I'm kind of wearing out. But I'm attempting to show that it is possible. We can live this way, and we can make it through this.
Right.
But we can only do it by changing the way that we live, and by placing Spirit first, as opposed to placing the mistake that humanity always makes is they end up placing the pleasures, if you will, of the real world and the issues of the real world. They end up putting that first. The material world comes first. And they end up putting their spirituality, you know, down the ladder somewhere and kind of down to secondary importance.
Exactly.
And that's where humanity always loses its way.
Right.
You know, they lose their connection with the Spirit, and they end up committing themselves completely to the benefits of the material world. So it's all on us. You know, we can make this happen.
Right.
And it's just necessary for us to, you know, reconnect with the ancient teachings and to change the way that we live in accordance with that.
Right. Well, you know, a few weeks ago, I had a news story of the government, some people from the government going to the Native Americans to teach them how to get the fires under control, how to be one with nature. And I immediately thought about that Hopi prophecy, you know, when the white man would go to them and ask for advice. But the other thing I really love in your book is the ceremony, the medicine wheel, you know, doing ceremony, making offerings, saying your prayers every day. You know, where I live, I mean, I'm in a community, but I have two huge medicine wheels on my property. And I always get a kick out of people when they walk by and their comments, because most of them either don't know what it is or are fearful of them. And yet, you know, I can't imagine myself not living inside a medicine wheel.
That, you know, that was one of the great things in my life that changed to the point where I don't sound like I think I know everything or anything like that, but for many, many years, I had all kinds of metaphysical dilemmas and questions, and, you know, the world I lived in just didn't make any sense, and I lived my whole life, you know, attempting to answer these metaphysical dilemmas, and one of the metaphysical dilemmas I had was, why is humanity screwing it up so badly on this planet? You know, it just doesn't make any sense that the divine Spirit would create a race of beings who were so completely inept and unable to, you know, to live properly and to live in accordance with the web of life and live in harmony with Mother Earth. And then one of the great things that helped me was my own discovery of, you know, the Red Road, the indigenous spirituality, and my discovery of the importance of ceremonial spirituality.
Right,
because
sacred.
That really, you know, once we connect with these things, and I have to give credit to my elder friend Eric Gonzalez in this regard, as a man who really helped me in this regard, because I discovered Eric in 2009, and I started attending his ceremonial events up here, interestingly enough, at Deer Mountain is where the events were, and now I live here, interestingly enough. But, yes, our ceremonial spirituality is the hub of everything. It's absolutely the basis of it. That's where we derive our power. That's where we derive our strength. That's where we derive our supernatural powers. And it's all based upon living life ceremonially, you know, in other words, praying every day, making ceremonial fires, making the ceremonial offerings, and smoking the ceremonial pipe, and talking to spirit, with our prayers. And it all comes back to that. And when I discovered my own ceremonial spirituality, and when I discovered the metaphysical aspect of following indigenous spirituality, it answered all my metaphysical questions. Everything, my metaphysical world makes sense to me now.
Right.
And it makes sense to me now, just on the basis of my connection, my belief in the divine spirit of the living universe, and my belief in my connection with the divine spirit of the living universe, so energetically, vibrationally, being the most important thing I can do in this world is connecting with these natural forces and living my life on the basis of this vibration, connecting with these natural forces, and it basically just the forces of nature.
No, absolutely.
That's the basis of it all.
Right.
And the other thing I like about this kind of spirituality is I really believe that it's something everybody can embrace, because it's a form of spirituality that's based upon our relationship with nature and our relationship with the earth.
Right.
And that's the one thing that's primarily missing from the civilized world today is this relationship with spirit and this sustainable and harmonious relationship with the earth. That's what's missing from the civilized world. And that's what the civilized world needs to relearn and needs to learn how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this is a religion, if you will, or a system of spirituality that is open to everybody, that everybody can embrace. It's basically a love of nature and being connected with the forces of nature,
right.
And living in harmony with nature. And it sounds complicated, but it really isn't.
It's the basic philosophy of the medicine wheel. Sorry, it's interdependence on nature and all living things. But I think that to answer what you were just saying, we have unfortunately a lack of the sacred. And a fear of nature. I mean, they polled young kids, young kids meaning people in their 20s, and they're actually afraid of nature. They don't want to, go camping or spend the night out in the woods or whatever. And here, even here in Arizona, where we have so much beauty, so much natural beauty, most people will drive on the most gorgeous highway surrounded by natural desert and not notice it.
Right.
It's like nature is in the way because humans have forgotten their connection to Mother Earth.
Well, humans have been robbed of their souls, basically, and that's the objective of the New World Order is to rob us of our freedom and to rob us of our spirits, because that makes us easier to rule. I read an article recently called "Ghost Dancing," and suggesting that maybe this is something that we needed to reconnect with, and this is something we needed to start doing again. And the ghost dancing is an example of us reconnecting with the spirit world in that way, and finding our solutions to the problems of the world in that way, through those spiritual connections. So yeah, it's critically important.
Mm-hmm. One question, because I don't want to run out of time without getting to this one. Even the people that profess to be awake, they believe that only reptilians are on this planet and that they're evil. Do you agree with that? I'm sure at the beginning you said there were multiple races on this planet. But why the reptilians getting such a bad name, and are they the only ones?
Well, we have to thank David Icke for that, because in his book, in particular, the Biggest Secret, he makes such a wonderful case. And David is so thorough; he's such a good investigative reporter. He's so thorough in terms of his proof, of the reptilian nature of the extraterrestrial influences here, and he traces that back and throws out a reptilian imagery. When you go back and you look at the royal families and all their family emblems and all that kind of stuff, it's just filled with reptiles and the cathedrals in Europe, in France and Notre Dame, things like that. It's all reptiles. It's all reptilian. The same thing in Great Britain, the financial district there. It's guarded by reptilian beings. So as far as the reptilian nature of it, I certainly think that's definitely a strong possibility. But like I you know, like you just alluded to, I do believe that there are many other, you know, this is not just limited to reptilians. I believe there's a lot of other, you know, extraterrestrial forms. And a lot of the extraterrestrial forms quite likely might not even be physical in nature. You know, a lot of these beings, particularly the higher consciousness, the benevolent beings, the higher consciousness type beings, you know, might just be energy forms. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of, you know, no physical bodies at all. And I think there's an awful lot of different possibilities as far as the various, ET influences or forms that they might take.
Right.
And I know that I've had several encounters, experiences, sightings, if you will. You know, I've been visited by extraterrestrials myself. And I've never actually had a reptilian experience. It's always been, you know, other types of shapes and forms and those sorts of things. So I think it's very overdetermined. I think there's lots of different possibilities here and lots of different forms and shapes that this might take.
All right, right. Well, I agree. And, you know, for me, I just tell people the quickest way to see who these people are is you just look at their eyes. Their eyes are vacant. And if you give them a hug, it's an empty hug. You're hugging nothing. It's like it's air. So in a way, you know, they're kind of easy to spot if you know what to look for. But, you know, people also have to realize, and I think you said it in your book, I'm trying to say what the words were, that these hybrids rule the world. And when you look at the world as it is, I mean, I don't know of one leader of any country that's worth anything. You know, there's no Gandhis out there. There's no saints. There's nothing. It's just like the whole world is moving towards one direction, and it's a bad direction.
I think they're all puppets. I mean, they're all just puppets, and I think a lot of them are mind controlled. Also, I very, very much believe that Joe Biden fits in that category. I think Joe Biden is an absolute puppet. I think he has almost no soul left. There's really not much humanity left in him, not much life left in him. And I think he's just following orders. And I don't even know if he's aware of the fact that he's following orders.
Well, what's your opinion of Trump? Do you think he's human?
I'm definitely ascribed to the lesser of two evils as far as Trump is concerned. I certainly, you know, like I said, I don't vote, and I think the whole thing is an illusion, and I think he's part of the illusion. He does have a couple of qualities for me that are appealing. One thing I like about Donald Trump is the fact that he is a Washington outsider. You know, he's not an insider. He's not a part of that game. And I think that's one of the reasons why the global elite, you know, and the Illuminati are so out to get him in the way in which they are, because he presents a threat in that way, that he's not as controllable as the other ones are.
Well,
the other thing I like about Donald Trump is the fact that he's not afraid to be politically incorrect. I think that is so refreshing. And even if the things he says are just bold-faced crazy, I don't care.
It's just bold-faced crazy.
And I applaud politically incorrect, even if it's wrong.
Right.
There's nothing worse than all these politicians, and Biden fits into that category. He's just saying the same thing that they've all said for, you know, for 200 years. And it's just... It has no meaning anymore, hearing the words come out of his mouth.
Well, you know, you and I will have to, I'm not going to disagree on Biden. I mean, you know, he is what he is, always has been. But I've seen Trump, and I've seen his eyes, and I've seen his shape-shifting. And I do know that his family has been connected to the One World Order all the way back to Nikola Tesla. But... people are still waiting for a savior. And that's, I think, the word we need to end the show with. There are no saviors. We're it. You remember that expression, we are the ones we've been waiting for?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I have to tell you that, you know, my faith in humanity, getting it in enough time before the blue sun shows up. And I could tell you, as I cover the world every day, I fully expect to see that blue sun almost any day now.
Okay.
I mean, that's just what it looks for. And after reading your book, I said, bring it on. Okay.
Right.
Let it happen already. Because as you said, you know, this is, even Einstein said it, you know, this is all an illusion, albeit a persistent one. And it's an ugly illusion. And without my spirituality, your spirituality, or as you say, follow the good red road, I don't know how anybody could stay in balance in this world.
That is the primary source of our power. It's the primary source of our protection, and that's the thing that will get us through this. If we can stay true to it and follow the path and be true to the path, that's the answer.
Absolutely. Well, Jack, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Again, I really enjoyed reading your book. I hope everybody else does. And keep in mind that the only ticket out of here is the spiritual one.
Thank you so much for having me on. I always enjoy talking with you. And like I said to you when we were emailing, you're one of the few people in the world that I don't worry about what I say to, because I know that you're, and even if we disagree on something, it doesn't mean we have to call each other names or, you know, I say a nice thing about Trump and you're not calling me a Nazi or anything else, you know. But
hey, listen, everybody has their own opinion, you know. Unfortunately, I grew up in New York at the same time he did. So I just know more about him than most people. And it doesn't really matter. At this point, it doesn't really
matter. I'm not endorsing him, and I certainly know that his policies and relationship, he certainly is not a spiritual man, and his policies and relationship, you know, to
To
nature and preserving nature.
Absolutely. To me, he's an enemy of all life on the planet because I cover every protection, whether it's animals, the air, the water, that he is getting rid of. And, you know, some people, you know, you and I, we're up in years, you know, so we're looking for, you know, looking to leave here and go home and maybe have some reward. But there are a lot of people who are in our age group who already got their rewards here. And I don't want to be in their shoes when the shit hits the fan. So, again, thanks, Jack. We'll talk again soon.
Let's keep in touch for you.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Jack Ellis, Blue Sun, Red Sun, Story of Ancient Prophecy Unfolding in the Modern World. And all I can say is after reading this book, I hope it happens soon. So I hope you enjoyed today's show and two human beings who can actually disagree and agree and go back and forth. And I'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.